CNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last. Just kicking down the cobblestones, looking for fun and feeling.
Oh, good morning, Reading. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and here we go again with Positively Healthy. So through the phone lines from Tennessee, we have Tom Naughton, the producer and director and writer of Fathead, the movie, the 2009 documentary. And here in the studio, we have Mark Beecham, our co-host. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you, Trudy. I look forward to talking to Tom.
Oh, good. And Bob, welcome. Nice to have you here.
Great to be here, Trudy.
All right. And so, Tom, here we go. How's everything out in Tennessee?
It's lovely in Tennessee. Smartest move I ever made.
Why is it great?
Well, it's beautiful country, lots of rolling pastures and big hills and lovely green trees and a lot of wildlife. And I haven't been flipped off in traffic since for the 3 years since I left California. So what's not to like?
Oh, no. Gosh. Well, I could see on your blog we have raccoons, possums, and a lot of greenery. So,
yes, the raccoons and possums I'm not crazy about since they try to kill my chickens, but it comes with the countryside.
Definitely. And where did you live in California?
We lived in Burbank for about 11 years.
Oh, wonderful. Well, we're up here in the north, and so welcome to the show. And, you know, I want to start with how hard, you know, we watched Fathead for the first time not very long ago, and I would run across I'd be reading something somewhere, and someone would say, the movie Fathead changed my life. And then blah, 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 blah. Somewhere else it would say, someone would write, the movie Fathead changed my life. And I'm like, I gotta watch this Fathead movie. I mean, how could it be going past me? I mean, it's 2013 and I'm finally watching it. So, but every time as I'm watching this, I kept thinking, boy, that looks like a lot of work to make. So, you know, my hat is off to you for the effort that went into that.
And what was your inspiration? Obviously the movie by the other guy about that, you know, fast food.
Yeah. You know, it really, my motivation to make it changed. When I saw Super Size Me, I was kind of annoyed with it. I decided, you know, I mean, it was entertaining, but there was so much that I thought was wrong from a factual standpoint that I said, I think I'm going to make a little reply to this. And that's what it started out as. And then as I started really looking into nutrition science, as I was getting ready to go onto my own fast food diet, I was getting madder and madder saying, oh my God, we've been lied to. So much of what we've been told is a healthy diet is just not true. So even as I was making it, the focus and motivation for making it changed.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay, so you started really learning about the benefits of fat somewhere along the way?
I did. I kind of had figured out before that maybe eating all those whole grains wasn't such a good idea because I had found that a higher carb diet for me seemed to put weight on me, even if it was a low-fat, high-carb diet. But I didn't really take a good look into the science until I started making Fathead. It was just through trial and error. I'd kind of find like, no, I seem to do better if I don't go crazy on the carbs. And then once I started making Fathead, I really did want to get into the science at that point. And that's when I really changed the focus of what the film was going to be about.
Okay, so you started out really watching, you watched the movie and you said, I mean, kind of as a rebuttal, that was your beginning, or you were interested in nutrition way before, which made you sort of annoyed with Spurlock's film? I mean, somewhere you knew stuff.
You know, I was interested in nutrition before, but I was wrong about it.
Uh-huh.
In fact, my first job out of college, I actually wrote for a health and fitness magazine, and we did articles on proper nutrition, and at that time, like pretty much every other journalist in the world, I was just parroting the advice we were getting from the USDA. And, you know, somewhere out in the world, if somebody wanted to dig long and hard enough, they could find articles by me on why you should eat a low-fat diet. But again, I wasn't really digging into the research. It was just kind of like, oh, we get these press releases, and we talk to one or two doctors, and they say, yep, eat a low-fat diet, so that's what we were writing. It really was not until I started making Fathead that I really looked into it. And of course, what had changed in the interim was the internet. Back when I was writing for this little magazine, you called a few sources, you dug things out of your files. when I was making Fathead, at this point, you could be out on the internet, and I'm looking up health information, nutrition information, and I see all these sites where people say, no, no, the standard advice is wrong. So you click their links, you click next links, and pretty soon you're looking at the actual research. And that's when I was going, wow, we really, really have been lied to.
Oh, fantastic. Well, you know, we're going to take a quick break here. We're going to go to commercial, and when we come back, I want you to explain to the listening audience your movie Fathead, because right now the three of us are having a little conversation without the public. So,
sure.
Yeah, so we'll be right back. This is Dr. Trudy Pratt. You're listening to Positively Healthy.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last. Just kick them down the cobblestones.
Hey, Mom, thanks for breakfast.
Yeah, honey, my cholesterol thanks you. Hey, do you need help here with the dishes? Because the game's on. And...
No, you go ahead. You know me, I live for cleaning the kitchen, especially after cooking 2 pounds of bacon.
I would have made him help.
Honey, did you say something?
No, I'm good. It's me down here, your drain.
Okay.
I noticed you're about to dump all that bacon grease down into me, and I thought you should know that...
That I'm going crazy because my sink is talking to me?
Well, technically I'm your drain, and yeah, it's a little crazy, but drains have feelings too, you know. That's why, as tempting as it is, dumping kitchen grease down into me can clog me.
Good to know.
Yeah, one more thing. My cousin Toilet wants to remind you to quit tossing your baby wipes or dusting wipes down him. It can severely clog our sanitary sewers.
It's true. Improper disposal of household items can severely clog your drains and sanitary sewers. If you have questions on the disposal of certain items, log on to ReadingUtilities.com. That's ReadingUtilities.com. This message has been funded by the City of Reading Public Works Department.
You're probably wondering, where do I go? I'm out of coffee. Well, let me tell you, Tobacco and Brew, guaranteed to provide you with the freshest coffee beans. With the rising cost of coffee, Tobacco and Brew offers the best prices, quality, and a large variety as well. Check it out. Go in and meet the friendly staff who will help you with selection and specification of your brewing needs. Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive.
Pulse Urgent Care welcomes back Dr. Richard Musselman, joining Dr. Clayton Reinhardt, Dr. Seeger Beatty, and family nurse practitioner Deborah Wright in Pulse's newly expanded facility. Pulse doctors are available to serve you for any urgent care needs 7 days a week from 10 a.m. till 8 p.m. Flu shots are now available. Pulse Urgent Care is on Hilltop Drive across from Kmart. Call 722-1111 or visit pulseurgentcare.com. Medicare and private insurances are accepted. Pulse Urgent Care says if it's urgent to you, it's important to us.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last. Just kicking down the cobblestones, looking for fun and feeling groovy.
Welcome back. You're listening to KCNR 1460. You know it's community radio in the North State. And so we're talking to Tom Naughton from Fathead, the movie. And Tom, go ahead and give us a little history of the movie.
History of why I came to make it, or what's it? What is it?
What's it about?
It in the beginning of it, it's kind of a look at Super Size Me, because a lot of people watch Super Size Me and they think, okay, now I understand why we have this obesity epidemic. It's because of McDonald's. It's because of supersized meals. So I start out kind of showing what's wrong with Super Size Me, how his math doesn't add up, how his idea that people are just these robots who are eating these big meals because those big meals are put in front of people's faces. I kind of show how all that doesn't really make sense. Then about halfway through, I start getting into real nutrition science. Let's look at what really makes us fat. Let's look at what really went wrong in American society. And newsflash, it wasn't because McDonald's started selling large Cokes and large fries. It was because we... as a nation, we're told fat is bad for you, you need to cut back on fat, and you need to replace those calories with, you know, grains and other forms of carbohydrates, and that'll prevent heart disease. And all that did was provoke high insulin levels, which made people fat. And I get into other bits about what's wrong with the health advice we've been giving, but in a nutshell, that's what the film is about.
So we are deprived of fat, which we need, our brains need, and all of our cells need. And because we are not getting enough fat, we are chronically hungry. And because we're chronically hungry, we're snacking all the time.
Yeah.
And it's a kind of an endless feedback loop.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's brilliant.
Even when we do eat fat, we're now eating the wrong kinds of fat, because the fats we were told that are that we are told are bad for us, which incidentally they are not. The science is pretty clear on this. The fats we're told are bad for us, such as saturated fat, such as the cholesterol in eggs. We were told these are bad for us. They're not. They're actually good for us. We not only cut down on fat, we replace them with vegetable fats that were supposed to be good for us that are not. The vegetable fats do not give you that feeling of being satisfied. They don't provide you with the rich micronutrients you need to feel good and happy and full. So we cut back on fat and we switch to the wrong kinds of fats, and consequently we just provoked this situation where people are hungry and dissatisfied all the time. They don't know why they're eating too much, but they are. And if you listen to most of the quote-unquote experts, they just say, oh, people just eat too much. Well, I don't think that after 200 years of America being America, that all in one generation, everybody became a fat, lazy slob who eats too much. Something changed, and what changed was the diet.
You had a particularly, for me, revelatory section in the movie where you sort of chastise people, and the government for that matter, for saying that people who are fat are, you know, ignorant and unable to control themselves. And in fact, what you're saying is that they are the victims of a metabolic system that's gone awry because of the bad food they've been told they should be eating.
Our old food pyramid.
Absolutely. You know, as I've said to people to try to make this as succinct as possible, people think this is about character. It is not about character. It's about chemistry. When you set up certain sort of distorted biochemical conditions in your body, you are going to be hungry. And part of the reason you're going to be hungry is you've set up a situation where a disproportionate number of the calories that you are consuming are going into your fat cells and kind of being locked up there. So people are always, they see fat people, well, how can that person be hungry? They have all that fat on them. Well, if I filled your pantry with food and then I nailed the door shut on your pantry, it doesn't matter how much food you have in storage. If you can't get to it, you're going to need more food. And that's really what's happening with the fat people, most of them in the country today. They're in a biochemical state where they're storing calories that they have a difficult time releasing. So they have to eat again because the calories can't be tapped for fuel.
And how do they tap them for fuel?
Well, I think it's a fairly complicated issue, but I think the simplest way to think of it is high levels of insulin, and I don't mean like immediately after a meal. I'm talking about high circulating insulin throughout the day. The higher your insulin levels go, the more they kind of shut off access to the fat cells. We have put ourselves in a situation now where most of the fat people walking around have chronically high levels of insulin, and the insulin is preventing them from tapping their own fat for fuel. So in order to fix that, we have to get their insulin levels down, and that means a shift in diet.
And specifically how?
Specifically, they need to stop eating the foods that are making them insulin resistant. So that means give up the sugars, give up the grains, in spite of what everybody's been told about how awesome grains are for your health. It is simply not true. Give up the white rice, the white potatoes, and then depending on how insulin resistant the person is, they may have to start cutting starches down even more than that. Now, personally, I didn't have to cut my starches to zero, but I know some people who, in fact, have to keep their sugar and starch intake at pretty much zero.
And sugar is a terribly, terribly addictive substance. I mean, people are horribly addicted to it.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's true. And sugar and white flour both, to an extent, tickle the same part of your brain that cocaine does. So it's a difficult thing for a lot of people to give up. And the worst thing we did was when we started this anti-fat hysteria, that is when a lot of desserts, and not just desserts, other foods, in order to make them palatable as low-fat foods, they added more sugar. And everybody thought it was okay because they were non-fat or very low-fat. That's why we had all those Snackwells desserts and all these low-fat or non-fat yogurts. And, you know, everybody thought that was a good idea at the time. It turned out it was pretty much a huge mistake.
I was just at the yogurt shop the other day, and a woman was saying, oh, it's low-fat, as she was pouring herself a huge container of the yogurt and then putting all these M&Ms and Heath bar right. chunks on the top.
Right, right.
But and that's sort frankly, of, that's the mentality though. I mean, as far as you start kind of thinking that and your taste buds, you're never satisfied because there's not enough fat for you to kind of go like, there we go.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if you think about what people will just eat and eat and eat and eat, you look at like ice cream and cookies and potato chips and things like that. And when was the last time you ever saw someone sit down and say, I'm going to eat 24 eggs?
Right.
That's politically incorrect.
You know, or people don't order a steak and then say, give me another one, and then eat that and say, give me another one. I mean, it's the sugars and the processed flours that provoke these really kind of perverted appetites.
Oh, definitely. Well, we're going to take another quick break, and we're talking to Tom Naughton, the director, the producer, writer, all those things. I'm not sure exactly, other than writing it, what you did, Tom. But we'll come back, and we're going to conquer that. So we're this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. We'll be right back.
Too fast. You got to make the morning last. Just kicking down the cobblestones, looking for fun and feeling.
The Weston A. Price Foundation was created to put forth the research of Dr. Price, whose meticulous study of healthy cultures around the world has given us a foundation for traditional foods that promote vibrant health. The foundation is dedicated to restoring nutrient-dense foods to the human diet through education, research, and activism. The Weston A. Price Foundation supports organic and biodynamic farming, pasture feeding of livestock, community-supported farms, honest and informative labeling, and prepared parenting and nurturing therapies. You can join a local Weston A. Price chapter to attend monthly meetings and learn about these healing foods and practices. Creating community around healing foods is what Weston Price is all about. Check out their website, www.westonaprice.org. It's a virtual encyclopedia of information. Join the foundation and receive their stunning quarterly journal, Wise Traditions.
The home of good health in Reading for over 30 years is Orchard Nutrition. You'll love Orchard's in-store deli, featuring no-nitrate meats and fresh roasted beef from the local Lazy 69 Ranch. Try their bakery fresh bread, and of course, there's organic produce washed in Orchard's purified water. A part of the Reading community for over 30 years, family-owned and operated for three generations, Orchard Nutrition is far more than a health food store. They're the North State Nutrition Experts. Orchard Nutrition, 221 Locust Street in Reading.
This is Mark Story, CEO of Haven Humane Society. The heat is upon us, and I wanted to remind everyone of how hot it can get in a car or the back of a pickup for our pets. If you see any unattended animals in cars in the heat, please call Haven Humane Animal Regulations at 241-2550 so we can help.
While serving in Iraq, Sergeant Jason Nielsen suffered a paralyzing injury. Paralyzed Veterans of America's service officers are trained to help injured veterans get all the benefits they've earned. To help paralyzed veterans, visit pva.org.
You got to make the morning last. Just kicking down the cobblestones, looking for fun and feeling groovy.
Welcome back. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and you're listening to Positively Healthy. And we are talking with Tom Naughton, the writer of Fathead, the movie, the 2009 documentary. And welcome back, Tom.
Thank you.
Okay, you wrote it.
Yes.
And starred in it.
And starred in it.
I was a very, very, very small crew. I wrote it. I was the on-camera, you know, character. I edited it and did rather a lot. I wrote a couple of the songs. I had a buddy of mine write most of the rest of the music. My wife did the created the animated characters.
Impressive.
I hired a kid who was just out of film school to do to make the characters move, and that's pretty much the whole crew.
Oh, my gosh. And then you're also a stand-up comedian or comic, right?
I used to be.
You
I don't really do
be.
That anymore after okay. my girls came along. I didn't want to live on the road, which is what comedians do.
Yeah, which is why we laughed so much during the movie. And
well, you know, that was a conscious decision. I didn't like the message of supersize me, and like I said, I certainly disagree with a lot of his supposed facts, but there's no denying it's an entertaining movie. He's funny, and I wanted to answer funny with funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one point during the movie, actually a couple times during the movie, you made an attempt, or you tried to break down his math. He said, oh, I'm I forget exactly. He was claiming to have taken or eaten 500 calories,
5,000
calories per day. And you were saying, well, this doesn't quite add up because you were talking about the various combinations of meals, supersized or not. And then you tried to contact his agent to get his food log and you never heard back. Is that right?
No, and it's funny. Well, let me back up first. I believe he did consume 5,000 calories a day and then some. What I was disputing was he had set up these rules at the beginning. I'll eat three meals a day. I'll only supersize if they ask me. Well, they only asked him to supersize 9 times in an entire month, which means other than those 9 meals in the entire month, he should have been eating normal McDonald's meals. Well, to get to 5,000 calories a day eating normal McDonald's meals, and don't forget he said I'll eat everything on the menu at least once, everything on the menu includes some meals that are actually reasonably low calorie. So what I'm disputing was that he followed those rules. I think he went in and he ate way more than people typically eat at McDonald's just so he could get fat in 1 month and go, oh, look what McDonald's does to you.
Oh.
So that's the bone of contention I had with him. And then he claimed that, well, I never heard back from his agents and blah, 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 and, you know, that no one would ever show me his food log. And then what's happened since Fathead, he was on a site, I guess it's called Ask Me Anything, where a person sits down and people can ask him questions. And some people who had seen Fathead started asking him, why don't you just settle this issue and just show us your food log? He said he doesn't have it anymore.
Oh, convenient.
Yes.
Hmm, interesting.
Now, where it went, I don't know. But he said, oh, I can't do that. I don't have it anymore.
The other thing that was, I laughed every time you talked about going on a low-fat diet, because you have a picture or a scene where you're obviously very depressed or looking very depressed and talking about how depressed it made you. And then you talked a little bit about the not great coincidence, I guess, that we had all these low-fat diets in bookstores at the same time we had a lot of books for sale about depression. Could you talk about that?
It was actually Dr. Mike Eads, who I was interviewing, who pointed that out to me, that around the 80s, when the low-fat diet craze really took off, he said you'd go into a bookstore and you'd see all these books on low-fat diets, and then you'd see all these books on depression, because suddenly it seemed like we had this huge rise in depression. And what he was telling me is, I don't think that's any coincidence. If you don't give your brain what it needs to feel happy, you are going to be depressed. And one of the things we need to feel happy are good natural fats.
Love it.
Could you talk a little bit about the guy from CSPI?
Oh, yeah. That's Michael Jacobson, the head of the Center for Science in the Public Interest, and as one of the people I was interviewing in Fathead said, the only thing wrong with that name is they don't really adhere to science, and what they do isn't in the public interest. They are basically a vegetarian group. They want everyone to be on a low-fat vegetarian diet, and they are the ones constantly running around trying to scare us about pretty much anything we eat. Anything that has salt, anything that has fat, they tell you it's going to kill you. And I mean, frankly, he's just a ridiculous individual, which is why I had my wife draw a very funny caricature of him, and we turned him into a superhero called the guy from CSPI, who runs around and basically saves people from eating what they want to eat.
How does he have so much traction and credibility with the media, do you think?
I think it's because, and I worked in media, so I understand this, drama sells in media, and CSPI has mastered the craft of making everything sound like a looming disaster. So they don't just say fettuccine Alfredo is, you know, a bad choice. They say it's a heart attack on a plate, and it plays well in media to point out foods that people eat all the time and basically say, this is going to kill you. And in fact, I once told my wife, just watching news, I said, here's what most news stories are. They come down to one of three themes: scandals, sex, things that can kill you. And for the guy from CSPI, it's things that can kill you.
It wasn't sex.
Yes. Yes.
Tell us about the impact the movie had immediately. Was it slow to catch on?
It was slow to catch
on.
You know, it's, you mentioned as you were introducing the show that, well, how's this thing been out since 2009 and I'm just now hearing about it? It's because for the first 2 years it was out, people who have like low-carb blogs and stuff, they were talking about it. recommending it to people who read their blog. So for like 2 years, basically it was a case of the movie was preaching to the choir. People who already were kind of into low-carb diets were recommending it, and people were buying it, and we were getting sales. And I thought, wow, that was a lot of effort for something that doesn't seem to have gone very far. And then it went to Netflix, and then it became a recommended pick on Netflix. And suddenly people who had no idea about any of the stuff that I talk about in the film were watching it just because it popped up on their screens. That's when it suddenly got all this momentum. So 2 years after the official release, it suddenly felt as if it had just been released.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
And then, well, it looks like we're going to go to a quick break here. So I'll hold my question, and when we come back, we'll have more questions for Tom Naughton of Fathead. We'll be right back.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last, just kicking down the cobblestone.
The Weston A. Price Foundation was created to put forth the research of Dr. Price, whose meticulous study of healthy cultures around the world has given us a foundation for traditional foods that promote vibrant health. The foundation is dedicated to restoring nutrient-dense foods to the human diet through education, research, and activism. The Weston A. Price Foundation supports organic and biodynamic farming, pasture feeding of livestock, community-supported farms, honest and informative labeling, and prepared parenting and nurturing therapies. You can join a local Weston A. Price chapter to attend monthly meetings and learn about these healing foods and practices. Creating community around healing foods is what Weston Price is all about. Check out their website, www.westonaprice.org. It's a virtual encyclopedia of information. Join the foundation and receive their stunning quarterly journal, Wise Traditions.
If you are running your own business, you already know that if there are 1,000 items on your to-do list, you really have 3,000 things to get done. Success in business is in the details. You need help. Let the smart professionals at Five Star Bank help you take care of those financial details. Yes, smart people doing good business. Life is 10% of what happens to us and 90% of how we react to it. Be positive. Those at the top of the mountain did not fall there. Visit us at Five Star Bank and let us show you how we specialize in emerging business and commercial real estate. Five Star Bank also specializes in hard work, working hard for those that believe that success is just on the other side of the next opportunity. Thomas Jefferson was a great believer in opportunity, for he found that the harder he worked, the more he had of it. Your time is as valuable as your success. So visit us at Five Star Bank, 358 Hartnell in Reading, or call Eric Woodstrom at 223-6652. Online at fivestarbank.com. Five Star Bank, professional, progressive, and personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Hear us streaming 24/7 on KCNR1460.com.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last. Just kicking down the cobblestones. Looking for fun and feeling groovy.
Welcome back. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and you're listening to Positively Healthy today. And so we're talking with Tom Naughton of the movie Fathead. And Tom, are you still there in Tennessee? Are you still with us?
I still live in Tennessee, yes.
He's still there. Good. Okay. Well, you know, as we went to break, we were talking about how the movie was out from 2009, and then 2 years ago, it really hit Netflix, and it was almost like it got re-released for you.
Yeah, that's correct. That's when I really started to feel the momentum.
And since this has developed legs, to use a phrase I guess they use in the industry, what kind of feedback have you been getting from on the movie?
You know, I would say the feedback has been overwhelmingly positive. I occasionally get a hate mail, which frankly I just delete without reading. If I'm one sentence into it and I realize what it is, I just delete it. I don't really care to let people dump garbage in my brain. But I have gotten an awful lot of emails from people that frankly kind of I find humbling. It's not something I'd expected. People literally emailing me and saying, you changed my life, and I did not expect that when I made Fathead. So you read those, and it, you know, really kind of touches you.
How were their lives changed?
People who had been frustrated for decades in some cases, trying to lose weight the way everyone said they should, by severe calorie restriction, by going on low-fat diets. And they saw Fathead and said, oh, wait a minute, maybe I've got it all backwards. I'll try this. And what really, and I'm delighted when people lose weight, but the ones that really kind of touched me were the people who said, you know, I had not only been overweight for 20 years, I had been depressed for 20 years. And I changed my diet after I saw Fathead because I wanted to lose weight. And oh my God, the depression went away. I didn't know I could feel this good. And again, I totally did not expect that when I made the film, but when you hear from people saying, bless you, bless you, bless you, you changed my life, I know I don't have to spend the next 20 years depressed, I mean, it's a, you know, it's humbling.
You, according to the movie, you have been, over the course of your life, been on several diets, right?
Yeah, that's why I understand where these people are coming from, because you try all these diets and they don't work, and what everyone says is, you failed. And as one of my on-camera experts, Dr. Mary Dan Eads, says, you didn't fail, the diet failed.
And one of the other things you said, you were talking about, you know, who's obese and who's not or whatever, and, you know, obviously in the film we're introduced to you and you seem like a guy of average build, and as the movie develops, we find out that you're pretty fit and all your numbers are great. But according to the BMI, the standard of who's obese or what's obese, you are not just overweight, but you're borderline obese, right?
There are two ways of declaring that a person is obese. One is a BMI of over 30. The other is a body fat percentage of over 30. My BMI wasn't over 30 because, believe it or not, I'm actually kind of thin-boned. But my body fat percentage was just over the limit. And it actually kind of surprised me because I didn't look in the mirror and go, oh, my God, I'm obese. I looked in the mirror and said, I wish I could lose 20 pounds. And when the doctor looked at it and said, well, you're clinically obese, it was kind of eye-opening. And that's when I started looking into the definitions of obesity, and I realized that those are a little arbitrary. A lot of people who you and I would never consider obese technically are, just because they're thick boned or they have thick muscles. Or
now, have those definitions changed over the years? Or
they did.
Okay,
they did. It was, I don't remember the year. I think it was sometime in the 1990s. The CDC kind of redefined overweight and obese, and really, people were kind of right at the threshold anyway, and then when they ratcheted the definitions down a little bit, suddenly we had a whole lot more people being defined as overweight or obese, which is why when you look at those slideshows, oh my God, look at the growing rate of obesity, it exaggerates the rise in the problem. That's not to say we didn't have a rise. Anyone walking down the street knows we have more fat people now walking around than we used to. But it made it look like everything just shot up all of a sudden, and that's not really what happened.
Okay.
One thing we've forgotten to really cue the listeners in on is, what was the nut, if you will, of the movie? Basically what you did was you ate fast food from, you know, any number of fast food outlets solely for a month, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and you were able to lose weight. And you were able to lower your cholesterol and some other
I did. Measures. Lowered my body fat percentage, lowered cholesterol, lost weight. And really the takeaway from that, and this is where I got into such a discussion of the nutrition science, I did that by doing the opposite of what so-called experts would tell you. I embraced the fatty foods. I was eating a very high-fat, high-saturated fat diet, but what I did do was limit my carbohydrate intake. So most people, you know, you will actually hear people go, oh, if you're going to eat a cheeseburger, eat the bun and throw away all that fatty meat. No, you should eat the fatty meat and you should throw away that white flour bun. And so by limiting my carbohydrate intake but eating all the fat I wanted, I was never hungry. I was never tired. You know, like you get fatigued when you try to calorie restrict. I was enjoying the meals, and yet I lost weight because with all that good fat coming in, my body said, hey, I'm happy, I'm satisfied, I don't need to stuff myself.
But you were obviously following a regimen where you were only going to have so many calories per day, and right. so many carbohydrates, and you were following that pretty precisely. And you were you increased your exercise a little bit. You were walking every night of the week or something, right?
I did, and in the years since then, I've learned that the amount of exercise that I added to my routine there probably made almost no difference whatsoever.
Okay.
It was really gets down to diet.
Now, you were hanging out around 2,000 calories, and you were having no more than 100 carbs. Now, for people who might not really know what that means, was that, can you explain breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and snack to our
sure.
audience? Okay.
And in the most recent version of Fathead, by the way, I also explained that I no longer even eat the way I did in the film, and we can talk about
yeah,
that if
yeah,
we have
yeah,
time.
Yeah.
By limiting myself to around 100 carbohydrates today, the goal of that was to keep insulin levels down, and when insulin levels drop, you have a much easier time tapping your fat cells. If you just restrict your calories without being able to tap your fat cells, all you're going to do is starve your cells, and you're going to hate it, and you're going to give up, and then people will tell you you failed on your diet. So if I went out and had, I would have like maybe a couple of sausage egg McMuffins, and I would either toss the muffins or I would take half of a muffin from each one and eat them that way. I would usually have like a big, nice fat cheeseburger for lunch. I might have another one for dinner or a salad. If I ordered fries, it was a small order. And basically each day I looked at how many carbohydrates have I had. Okay, I need to keep that around 100 or fewer.
Were you having the buns at lunch? Were there buns on those burgers at lunch?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
If they were within my carbohydrate budget for the day, then yes, I would eat the bun.
Okay. So if you had
and
bun.
Most days I did eat the bun.
Most days you did. Okay. Okay. Go ahead. I'm just
Well, what's changed since then is at that time I was very focused on carbohydrate intake. So if I could eat a hamburger bun and stay under my 100 grams, okay, no problem. I mean, I've since, after reading Wheat Belly, the book Wheat Belly, it's become really clear to me now that today's wheat is just not something we should be putting in our bodies, never mind carbohydrate budget. You just shouldn't put it in your body. So now I don't eat hamburger buns at all, no
mm-hmm.
matter what my carbohydrate budget is. I just don't eat bread. I don't eat cereals. I don't eat wheat, basically.
Right. Okay. So that's how you've changed. But for the, so I guess what I wanted people to see is that you made a shift. You started counting carbs, calories
right.
too, but you, they were, you were still eating quite a bit of food. I mean, that's a lot
I
of
was.
Food still. Yeah.
I was. And you know, what I've noticed since then is I really gave up on calorie counting completely.
Yeah.
Because what I found is when I eat enough fat, first off, if you eat the wrong kinds of carbohydrates, they will make you hungrier.
Definitely.
So if you skip those foods, now counting calories really does not become an issue because you're not going to be hungry and overeat anyway. And what I do now is my diet's mostly meat, eggs, fish, green vegetables, a little bit of low-sugar fruit, maybe a few nuts here and there, full-fat dairy if I have dairy. And frankly, just by focusing on those foods, I don't even have to think about calories because my appetite now seems so naturally controlled, which is how I think it should be for humans. I don't even think about calories, and I don't overeat because I am satisfied.
So walk us through breakfast, lunch, and dinner that you have now.
Now, breakfast would almost always be maybe 3 or 4 eggs, and we live on a little farm now, so those eggs come right out of our own chicken coop. Really can't get them much fresher than that.
Nope.
Cooked in Kerrygold butter, the grass-fed butter from Ireland, full fat. We don't do any of this low-fat stuff. I'll have coffee with either a little heavy cream or sometimes I'll throw a little coconut oil in there. Lunch is typically some sort of meat dish with some vegetables maybe, and dinner pretty much the same thing. And when we make vegetables, we put fat on those vegetables, lots and lots of fat on those vegetables, because we have 2 growing girls, and I've heard from so many parents, kids don't eat vegetables. Yes, they do. If you put Kerrygold butter on them, or like we do, take spinach, mix it up with a little butter, a little sour cream, a little Parmesan, some garlic, and some nutmeg, your kids will eat that spinach.
Sounds
so
fantastic.
It is a lot of vegetables with a lot of full quality fat, usually some kind of meat dish or fish, Again, a lot of eggs. If I want a little snack, I'll have some dry roasted almonds. In other words, it's all food your grandmother or your great-grandmother would recognize as food. Very little of what we eat comes out of a box or a package. And by eating this way, all four of us are healthy, fit, happy. No one ever has to think about calories because we just eat, and then we're satisfied, and guess what? We stay lean anyway.
And what's your exercise routine?
I lift weights doing Fred Hahn's slow burn method at the gym once a week to keep my muscles in shape. And then now that I have land, I built my own disc golf course out there, and 2-3 times a week I run out and play 18 or 36 holes of disc golf. That gets me out moving around, and it's between that and the lifting weights, I'm in pretty good shape for an old guy.
Oh, fantastic. Well, we're going to go to break again. So, you know, we're talking with Tom Naughton, the writer of Fathead, the movie, the 2009 movie, and we'll be right back.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the
The Weston A. Price Foundation was created to put forth the research of Dr. Price, whose meticulous study of healthy cultures around the world has given us a foundation for traditional foods that promote vibrant health. The foundation is dedicated to restoring nutrient-dense foods to the human diet through education, research, and activism. The Weston A. Price Foundation supports organic and biodynamic farming, pasture feeding of livestock, community-supported farms, honest and informative labeling, and prepared parenting and nurturing therapies. You can join a local Weston A. Price chapter to attend monthly meetings and learn about these healing foods and practices. Creating community around healing foods is what Weston Price is all about. Check out their website, www.westonaprice.org. It's a virtual encyclopedia of information. Join the foundation and receive their stunning quarterly journal, Wise Traditions.
Hi, folks. I'm Bob the Drop from Mount Shasta Spring Water. Did you know our spring water originates from glaciers high atop Mount Shasta? As they melt, the water flows through miles of volcanic rock to our springs at the base of the mountain. Pure and natural. Mount Shasta Spring Water is naturally the best and the official water of the United States of America. Give us a call today and ask about our special introductory offer. 1-800-922-6227. That's 1-800-922-6227. I highly recommend it.
Analog living in a digital world. Every week on Boomer Tech Radio, we explore how technology continues to impact our daily lives. Join us, Bob and Brenda Belongi, every Saturday from noon to one to learn about the latest goodies, gadgets, and gizmos, along with the breaking news that affects your day-to-day digital life. Boomer Tech Radio, brought to you by Advanced Automotive, safe, reliable car care for their customers and our community. That's Boomer Tech Radio, now noon to one on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.
I'm Dr. Maria Salas, your host for the Positively Healthy Show. I'm here with an amazing chiropractor who's been in practice for 29 years in Reading, Dr. Murray Coleridge. Hey, Doc, do you have some exciting news to share with us?
Hi, Maria. Yes. First, I want to say it's been an honor to serve the North State community. We have had such great patients over the years. My wife, Gina, and I are happy to announce that we are retiring, moving out of the area, and as of July 1st, you will be seeing my patients. Dr. Maria is my chiropractor, another Palmer grad, and has been in practice over 8 years. I'm confident my patients will be in great hands.
I'm super excited, too. I want to thank you and Gina for all your support over the years and all the adjustments. Thanks for keeping my nervous system healthy, too. So, Doc, what will your shingles say now?
Dr. Coleridge has gone fishing.
All right.
Dr. Maria Salas, HealthWise Chiropractic, 244-9000, 244-9000, on the web, healthwisedoc.com.
Hi, I'm Don Shulman.
On Sunday,
have fun with us.
We talk about timely things,
more informational.
We leave the politics to other shows.
I had the most amazing thing happen to me. I suddenly am 2 inches taller. I've lost 25 pounds. I can run around the block. And this morning, I discovered I could play the piano because I started listening to the Don Shulman Show.
Don Shulman.
Is there something wrong with him?
Clearly.
Every Sunday, 10 a.m. to noon, right here on 1460 a.m. KCNR.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last. Just kicking down the cobblestones, looking for fun and feeling groovy.
Welcome back. You're listening to Positively Healthy. Today I'm Dr. Trudy Pratt, and we have a guest on the line. We have Tom Naughton from the movie Fathead. Are you still there?
Still here.
All right. We're in our final segment, and gosh, we sure appreciate you being here today. And so, Tom, Mark, you have a question for Tom, right?
Yeah, Tom, how did fat become a four-letter word?
A huge mistake. Well, there was a rise in heart disease in the U.S. after World War II. Pretty scary rise in heart disease. A lot of 40, 50-year-old men were dropping dead of heart disease. It was a relatively new phenomenon, and everyone was desperate to find an answer. And unfortunately, a very hard-headed, arrogant scientist decided he had come up with the answer, that it was eating too much fat. And he based that on very little data from a handful of countries and said, oh, look, in this country they have a low fat intake and they have lower rates of heart disease. In our country we have a higher fat intake, we have a higher rate of heart disease. Aha, that's it. I've got it. He ignored the fact that you could have made that same correlation with sugar. You could have made it with automobiles. You could have made it with televisions. You could have made it with the amount of exercise people had. And really his ideas were somewhat ridiculed until he ended up on the board of the American Heart Association, which adopted his ideas, and suddenly the whole idea that fat causes heart disease was born. And really this whole idea of cut the fat from your diet and eat more carbohydrates was not intended as a weight loss program. It was intended as a way of avoiding heart disease. Now, it has since become, if you are really paying attention to the science, a completely discredited idea, and yet the average guy on the street still believes it. Most media health reporters still believe it. So the whole idea we need to cut fat from our diet was intended to reduce heart disease, which it does not do. And in the course of reducing the fat from our diet, we had to replace them with something. We replaced them with grains and other carbohydrates, and the result are skyrocketing rates of diabetes, and a lot more people are fat.
The other four-letter word is cholesterol. And can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, it was actually the same scientist, although the idea had been around before him, the idea that cholesterol causes heart disease. And that one is it's understandable how they would make that mistake, because if you cut open an artery, a diseased artery that's full of plaque, you will find cholesterol in there. So the idea became that, well, since we find cholesterol in a plaque, cholesterol must cause heart disease. It's just that it was a whole lot more complicated than that. Cholesterol is actually showing up in your arteries to try to repair damage. The cholesterol doesn't cause the damage. It shows up because it's trying to repair the damage. It's a little bit like blaming a scab for cutting you. And so this whole idea that cholesterol causes heart disease was born. And again, if you really look at the research, that is just not true. Cholesterol is kind of an innocent bystander.
And yet we've got a multi-billion dollar industry here that is trying to get everybody to lower their cholesterol through these cholesterol-lowering drugs.
Including children.
Including children and women.
Yeah, which drives me out of my mind. And if anyone ever tries to give my kid a statin, that person better be armed. It became a $36 billion industry, and it sprung up when everyone believed that cholesterol causes heart disease. It doesn't, but once that kind of industry springs up around a theory, it is very, very hard to get a theory like that to go away when there are so many vested interests.
Do you have any idea? I mean, nutrition, eating is something we do three times a day and have forever, or four times a day, or I don't know how many times a day. And yet there's such a great amount of mystery and mythologizing and ignorance and superstition attached to it. Why is that, do you think? Why isn't this the most researched area ever? I mean, something we do, every one of us does. Why don't we know a lot more about it than we do?
You know, a lot of the research into nutrition is actually new. And it's not, in many cases, very rigorous research. It doesn't approach the level of rigor that you find in fields like chemistry and physics. And I think that's partly because, you know, let's say I'm studying engineering. If I come up with a design for a bridge and that bridge falls down, nobody is going to care how beautifully I explained my theory. The bridge fell down. When you are in fields where the results of ideas take 20 or 30 years to manifest, it is much easier to promote a bad idea that sounds correct. In physics or chemistry, basically your experiments succeed or they fail. In dietary science, in a lot of dietary science, you know, you would you'd be complimenting it to call it science. We have these ideas like eat a low-fat diet, that's going to prevent heart disease. And if we're correct, we'll know that in 20 or 30 years. So there's not the immediate feedback, which allowed a lot of bad ideas to stay out there much longer than they should have.
Hmm. Now, where are you with, when you say Fathead 2 or the revised edition, what are you talking about?
I'm sorry.
Do I not know?
I should have explained that earlier.
Okay.
We, for legal reasons I won't get into, we needed a second version, basically to get away from a distributor that was sitting on the rights and doing nothing. So we came up with the director's cut, and I actually don't know which version you've seen, but I took out stuff from the original Fathead that I no longer felt was important or relevant. And at the end, I added a section to kind of show how my life, my diet, my health have changed since 2009 when the original came out.
Okay, we saw that then. And the two I've ordered off of Amazon will be that, clearly. And so, okay.
If people order off of Amazon, they're probably getting the old one.
The old one, okay.
Yeah. We have a listing on Amazon for the new director's cut, but there are still people selling the old one out there, so you'd kind of have to pay attention and make sure it says director's cut.
Oh, well then, I don't know. We didn't look close. I didn't know I needed to look so closely.
And we sell the director's cut through my blog, and that's actually the best way to get it.
And what is your blog again?
www.fathead-movie.com. Fathead's one word. So fathead-movie.com.
And what is it that you want? I mean, at this point, you've had this successful movie. You've changed a lot of lives. Where are you going from here?
Well, one of the things I totally did not expect when Fathead went to Netflix and got a wide exposure, I did not expect the number of parents who have emailed me and thanked me profusely for making Fathead, because they said, my kids love this. They watch it twice a month or whatever. My 10-year-old has watched this 7 times, and you really changed the way they think about food. They don't want donuts anymore. They don't ask me for sodas. They want bacon and eggs. They say, Mom, cereal's no good for you. I didn't expect that. I was not trying to make a movie that appealed to kids, and yet, strangely, it did. So for our next project, we're going to intentionally appeal to kids. My wife and I are working on a book that would be a cartoonish, fun, funny book in the Fathead style that will be addressed directly to kids to say, kids, here is how food affects your body. Things like, okay, boys, here's the food that gives you boy boobs, which is an issue for me because I had them. And I can tell you, any 13-year-old boy who's walking around with boy boobs hates it. And I didn't know it was my diet doing it to me. And then we're going to do a little DVD companion that will kind of explain the same things, but maybe a little more at the level where the parents, you know, it's a little more of the science for the parents. Here's the science to back up what we're telling your kids.
This is all very subversive, you know.
It is.
We love it.
I expect to hear from the USDA any day now.
Now, when will that book be coming out, are you guessing?
When it's done.
Fantastic.
our goal is to, because I'm still working as a software engineer to make the payments on my farm here, so it's a part-time project. But ideally, what we're shooting for is a year from now, when we go on the next low-carb cruise, the one we just finished, we would like to be able to introduce our book on that cruise.
Oh, good timing.
And so you've got to talk about the low-carb cruise.
What is a low-carb cruise? You know?
A low-carb cruise is where a bunch of those crazy low-carbers got together and said, let's go on a cruise together and let's get some really interesting speakers to come on board. And we are basically cruising like everyone else. We're having fun, except we confuse the heck out of the waiters because they come by the table and absolutely everyone at the table says, no thanks, I don't want bread. And then we have the speakers on the sea days when you're not doing shore excursions, the days where the ship is at sea going somewhere else, we have the speakers get up and give speeches and kind of educate us. It's a blast.
When's the next one?
May.
May of next year.
It's every May.
Okay.
It's every May. And anyone who's interested in going on it, and I would urge you to do so because you will learn a lot from these speakers, and the rest of the time, it's great to be on a cruise with 150, 200 people who understand why you eat the way you do and just get it. And we do karaoke together and just have a lot of fun together. Anyone who wants to learn more about it should go to lowcarbcruiseinfo.com.
Fantastic. And then on your website, you blog regularly. I mean, you're busy.
Yeah, I try to put out two or three posts a week. Because when I finished Fathead, I mean, frankly, when I first finished it, because, again, really small crew, it was a heart and soul commitment. I was exhausted from finally getting it in the can, and I didn't even want to think about this stuff for months. But then once I kind of recovered from the effort, I realized, no, there's way, way more to say than I said in the film, so I guess it's time to start a blog.
Oh, wonderful. Well, gosh. Mark, do you have a last question for Tom?
Yeah, last question. We've only got about 30 seconds left, but if you were to give somebody who's struggling with diet and weight, like, one piece of advice, what would it be?
I would say stop eating sugar, stop eating anything made from grains, stop eating all processed vegetable oils, and if you're still struggling with weight, try to get your carbohydrates down to 50 or fewer per day. Go from there, see what happens.
Wow. Okay, there's wisdom, people. So thank you so much for being on the show today. And you've been listening to Positively Healthy. This is Dr. Trudy Pratt. We'll see you next week.
And this is KCNR Shasta Redding.
George Snowden with